The Vox Markets Podcast.
Welcome to Taking Stock. It's Monday, start of the week, September the 11th, 2023. John's back after a weekend of shopping for beach shirts. Did you get a new one, John?
No, it was an old one.
Okay, all right. Very and but you had a party weekend, didn't you?
Yeah, we did. Yeah. Mostly take advantage of the Indian summer that we're having. Glorious. Yeah. Absolutely glorious.
Yeah, it's too hot, really, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Well, it's calmed down now. It's all right. Hopefully now we'll start getting back to the markets. And the thing I'm saying today, right, John, this week, quite a bit of data out. And we've got employment figures tomorrow. We've got GDP on Wednesday. And there's a lot of people saying, you know, employment slackening off. You know, people are hiring less. The pay is not increasing. And so it could be, this could be good for the markets. You know, bad economic data is good because that's what the Bank of England want to see. They want to see evidence that they're strangling the economy to bring prices down. And so, of course, I think it was the 21st of this month, we got the hike, expected hike, quarter percentage point. By all means, hit that subscribe button and, you know, comment. And the question is here, is it time to be now bullish? We are, and I did say on Friday, you know, we tend to be very bullish at the top of the market where we should be bearish. And we tend to be very bearish at the bottom of the market where we should be bullish. Because let's be honest, you're not going to get better prices than this. A lot of good stocks, a lot of them are cheap, you know. And so are you bullish? Are you bearish? Are you accumulating right now, you know, with a longer term view, thinking, you know, let's be honest, 12 months on the line, the market's going to be higher, aren't they? Surely, unless we have some kind of, you know, catastrophic world war or something. You know, never know where to go with China and all that. But are you bullish for the market, say, John, in 12 months' time? Do you think we could be higher from here?
I mean, it's hard to see, you know, it going much, much lower. But, I mean, there's some good companies that have been caught up in selling. And you would imagine they'll be higher. So I wouldn't describe myself as bullish. You know, there's a lot of economic bad news out there that is going to filter through to earnings. The interest rate rise cycle, you know, you've got to think that's nearing its end. So I wouldn't describe myself as bullish, but I'm definitely operating a watching brief. And there's a lot of stuff I've got my eye on. I want to start picking stuff up soon.
Yeah. Just a throwback to last week on Friday, you weren't here, but I did talk about, you know, sort of portfolio management, position sizing. And some people, unbelievable. What's your biggest holding, John? What do you say? And what percentage of your portfolio do you think it takes up?
Well, cash at the moment.
Oh, cash.
As I said before, and it's a pretty large proportion of cash that's sitting there, you know, ready to go. Dry powder, I would call it.
You know, ton of cash there, ready to go. Yeah.
But in terms of individual positions, I mean, Unilever's probably the biggest.
Yeah.
Single holding.
In fact, AI Investor says that biggest holding is ETF MSCI World, 12% of my portfolio. Unilever, biggest single stock, 8% of total portfolio. Craig says, top slicing, I think it's a great way to crystallize gains for reinvestment. I appreciate this goes against the compounding mythology, but it reduces exposure risk. I collect all my monthly dividends and reinvest into my holdings with the biggest discounted price.
That's sensible. Yeah. I mean, you know, so I mean, dividend reinvestment is, you know, unless you actually are investing to generate an income, which you would generally only be doing, you know, in retirement. Sticking those investments back in the market, sticking those dividends back in the market is definitely the way to go. I've just got it set up so that they reinvest in the stock that they've been paid by. But actually, I think that other approach that the listener talked about is a very sensible one.
Yeah,
you don't necessarily have to reinvest your dividends in the companies that have paid.
Yeah. Well, I tend to stick around. If I have conviction in stock, I would, you know, literally go up to 10%. But I start off smaller than that. And I can go a lot bigger than that, 10%, but unless I have super conviction, I don't. But there's a couple of people on here on Friday. One actually, after the show came out, says he's got 100% in one company. Oh. 150%. And that was Avactor, actually. I don't want Avactor. And so I thought, but you've got a lot of conviction, a good confidence in that. And, you know, it's still quite a high risk company. I know they're in oncology and they're in sort of clinical trials. I think I don't think they've completed the phase one yet. I don't know if they're around about that level, though. But so it's still a bit of risk ahead.
I wouldn't be able to sleep at night with that level of single stock exposure, particularly as you say, in what, you know, it has a very exciting potential, that company, but it's still. yeah, an area of the market where you can have some quite major stumbles. I mean, as I said, my own sort of personally managed SIP is only part of my portfolio as well. I've got, you know, big sort of pension holdings in what are more like the MSCI World type thing, big global tracking type stuff.
Yeah, I would say that if it's starting to rally a little bit here, I think they're expecting data out. But I would say if you can get above that sort of 120 level, looks like it's it could be go a bit higher.
It's a great company, you know, certainly not knocking it, but yeah, position sizing there, that level of exposure would make me very, very uncomfortable.
Yeah. I did that in the Great Financial Crash. I had all my money ever in Lloyds Bank, because after the Great Financial Crash, I thought they've nationalised RBS, and it did pay off. But literally, I did wake up a couple of nights sweating, thinking, "Oh, it's all gone. They've nationalised it." And so I did have that, and you sort of know, when you're at that level, you can't sleep right. That's it. You're overexposed a little bit. Is it the market so far? AIM is the only one down today, pretty much. And everything's up by a third of 1%, pretty much 250. AIM is down a third. Some of the house builders are rising here, John. Why is that? Why are the house builders up here?
Good numbers from Vistry today.
Oh, is it? Yeah.
Yeah, they were decent. They were really decent. Which is not what we've come to expect.
Vistry's up the biggest rise in the 52-50. Yeah. What they're saying, they're building more affordable houses, aren't they?
Yeah, which we spoke about before. I mean, and I think this is a smart move. It's their partnership division, basically. But. Yeah. But actually, the headline numbers look very, very decent. They acquired Countryside, so there is a bit of an acquisition effect going on there. But these were decent numbers, not what we've come to expect from the house builders of late. You know, particularly after that horrible Crest Nicholson warning the other week, and Barrett's, trimmed its dividend, trimmed its dividend. So that was obviously not the most welcome news across the sector. But Vistry's announced big capital return program as well, big buyback programs. And I do think, cutting its cloth to the current market conditions, what the country needs, and that's affordable housing, I think is very sensible. What they've got to make sure they do is deliver that at margins that are in line with where they've been before.
Yeah, 52-week high here. It's up 14%. They're breaking out that range. You can see that range up and down there. It's broken out of that. And so... yeah, that's good for them. They're doing well.
Yeah,
Mark likes that.
They do.
Okay, quick comments. Well done, Wales. Oh, that was, I honestly text a couple of friends of mine who are not from Wales saying, yes, game over when Wales went 32-14 up. And all of a sudden, Fiji started to come back at a scary rate. Oh, my word. Yes, be bullish, old dog says. Buy cheap simples. Yeah, I went 100% in Destiny when it was between 30 and 35 pence. My portfolio is a lot better for it now. Yeah, but it can go the other way, you see, as well, can't it? But, that's why I never tend to go that level of conviction now, but it can go the other way. It's a trouble. Okay. Let's have a look at the front page of Vox here. Let's scroll up. Some content first. So, Guild Esports, shares soar as it expands partnership with Sky. It's a Sky Glass. The Sky pushing us a lot, the Sky Glass. We were tempted almost to get one of those TVs, Sky Glass. And we said, no, hang on a sec. But how fast will they upgrade their tech compared to other companies who are specialising in TVs? And that's why we didn't buy it, you know? So, but what is this all about, John? Guild? Have you read into this?
I've not read into this. I had a very, very quick look. I mean, you know, the Guild is just, the business model is basically, you know, put these teams together, these esports teams, generate as much sponsorship income as possible. So having a partner like Sky, is very, very, very good for them because, where does this stuff get watched? It does get watched on streaming platforms, but, as it goes more mainstream, you want partners like Sky on board. They've also put a lot of money, Sky, into helping Guild redevelop its HQ. Sky is very good at this sort of stuff. So a very nice partnership there. Well, the shares are up. They're absolutely
17%. Yeah. But if you look at it, I mean, like I said, this was a company that I think David Beckham was sort of, I don't know if he's paid, but he did take a share in it at the start. I don't know what happened to that, whether he was paid to take a share in it or what happened, but I've not put any TR1s from him, I don't think. But it's still in a huge downturn like that. Look at that. It listed pretty much, 8 pence there. And it's now down. Look at that. 99% of his value is lost because down at not even 0.8 pence there. But that's quite a nice break. You see, it's not broken above the 50-day moving average like that before. So maybe that is the start of the end of the downtrend. Who knows? Hopefully for shareholders.
I must admit, I've still never watched a single minute of esports in my life. So, you know, this is next generation entertainment, but not for old fogies like me necessarily.
Oh, in fact, there's Beckham there. I was in sort of ILS exposure through Gfinity. That went completely wrong. I mean, Gfinity had a model where they were servicing sort of big companies, but it was very low margin. And now they've sort of ditched that and gone to the digital media. Yeah. I don't hold Gfinity anymore, but there we are.
The most important thing to look at here is, you know, how quickly is the loss narrowing? So, you know, just looking at the half year results, loss before tax down from pretty much 5 million a year ago to 2.3 today. So, you know, they're moving in the right direction. The more big content sponsorship deals they get, rather than, you know, the quicker they get to break even. And they need to do that. They've got about 1 million or so of cash in the bank. So,
yeah. Well, you know, Engage XR, right? This is like Meta and more sort of from the sort of learning education perspective. They are the interim results out. And look at that drop there, massive drop. What was that? 49% a while back when they had, I think, I don't know what happened there, but they had to raise money, I think it was. But they are commercializing this area, you know, whereas Facebook has seemed to have failed in some way. And so a lot of sentiment has come out of this because of, I mean, it's how Facebook were, well, they still call Meta, they call Meta now, aren't they, Facebook? Yeah, but they've now realized they've plowed loads of money into Meta, didn't they? Loads of it. And then people, you can sense people saying, Mark, and they came up with like these graphics like 1980s arcade games. I said, Mark, this isn't a step forward, mate. Who's going to be putting goggles on their heads and talking with people? What's the point? Well, I don't see the point of that. And a box on your head, and I understand it's good for gaming, maybe, or whatever. But anyway, XR seems to be commercializing it.
It's slightly different what they're doing, actually. Yeah. So, you know, the metaverse and sort of virtual gaming and all that sort of thing, you know, is entertainment. But Engage XR is actually VR for sort of corporate use. Mm. So, you know, if we were using our Engage VR headsets, Justin, we might be sitting in a studio together having this conversation.
Yeah.
Somewhere in the metaverse.
Yeah, and I could be wearing a nice beach shirt like yourself there.
You could be whatever you like in the metaverse.
Exactly, you could be animals, anything. I understand for education maybe and gaming, but for anything else, for meetings, it's a novelty, isn't it? I don't know. When I saw Facebook's or Meta's promo for it, I thought, are you kidding? Have you? And now they've gone down the AI route, realizing AI is the real deal. Meta, sorry, isn't. Is that a certain extent?
I do think because you know, there are sort of trends behind the potential adoption of this. You know, in various settings, and education, for example, is another. You know, remote working is, you know, obviously a lot of people are going back to the office, but this sort of remote conversations, remote workplaces are becoming, you know, more the norm. People aren't in every day, even if they are going back. So, you know, but remote working is hard.
Why do I want to be an elephant, doesn't it? Or cartoon version?
You could be yourself.
Cartoon version of myself. What's the point of that? Or I don't understand the point of it, really.
I think this is
on Zoom. This is fine. We're meeting remotely. This is fine. Why do we need to get even further into sort of being silly or being half someone we're not? I don't understand it.
Yeah, well, there are, you know, as this technology develops, there will be things that you'll be able to do in a virtual environment that we can't do through sort of just these, what is a very basic, you know, video comms channel, Zoom. Mm. Obviously, you can share notes and all stuff like that, but it's hard work. And, you know, for people who work remotely, you know, Zoom burnout is a real thing. Very stressful doing this all the time. You know, you might not think that's not stressful disease, I'm just on a call, but yeah, it's the sort of physiological effect of working like this. And things like, you know, VR are potentially a very not interesting solution to how we actually operate in a hybrid manner more effectively. You think as well, you know, travel, you know, it's a huge expense, and we've obviously got a lot of, you know, environmental pressures that are coming to bear on companies. So again, if you can operate effectively in a virtual way, you know, potentially it solves that problem as well. So, you know, I think I wouldn't scoff at it.
Oh, I would. So revenue is increasing for the half year. It's gone from 1.7 to 2 million. They're still making a loss, operating loss of 2.1. Cash wise, they've got plenty of cash because they raised that money at a massive discount. And let's look, it was the cash. So 9.4. This is actually euros, actually 2.9. So that's for half year. So they've got plenty of cash, even if they're burning. But
The pretext, you know, the EBITDA, you know, which is essentially, you know, a sort of proxy for cash profits, you know, it's going to be a loss this year of about 4.5 million. But then that sort of reduces to less than 3 in 24. So, yeah, moving in the right direction. And, you know, that amount of cash should get it to where it took to that break-even point.
Yeah.
And I think there's tailwinds.
Well, hopefully. Well, even if they're virtual tailwinds. Gregory, if you haven't got a lot to invest, taking a gamble on one stock is not too bad. If you have a lot, then you need to spread the risk a bit. Yeah, I totally agree with that.
Yeah,
I was a bit more risk taker, you know, back in 2009 when I had less to lose. Fredo, Barkby, we're going to look at Barkby, and I don't really get it. I mean, I've been on there. In fact, let's look at it now a bit. Barkby, right? They've got it's one of the biggest risers there, and I'm going to show you the screen here. I don't know if you ever looked at these, John.
But, not a company I know well at all, no.
No, up 166%, right? Now, they say the 11 million response to media speculation on, and this is Cambridge Sleep Sciences, right? The science-based sleep technology, the business behind Sleep Engine. I've just been on their YouTube channel, Sleep Engine, and basically you hook up with a hub or something like Google Home or something and play these sounds. And they say scientifically proven to help you sleep. But they say they may spin this out because, I mean, Barkby, I don't know how much they hold this company, Bill, but they say CSS, which is Cambridge Sleep Sciences, expect to generate revenue in excess of 10 million over the next 3 years. So 10 million over 3 years is 3 million. I don't see what the big deal is, really. I can't see the big deal here. They may spin it off. But I don't know. Barkby itself is a roadside real estate business. Focus on building and scaling a high portfolio of modern ESG compliant assets. So they're in the process of, say, of exiting their non-core investment, which I assume Cambridge Sleep Sciences are. But I wouldn't. I don't know the figures on Cambridge Sleep Sciences. If it's in 3 million, well, 10 million over the next 3 years, that's about 3 million a year. Are they making a loss on that? So I think it's one of the stocks where people have forgotten about, not aware of. And it's just sellers have dried up, release some positive news, and it flies like crazy. I don't know how sustainable that is, you know. So I'd be aware of rampers on Twitter.
It's an investment company to all intents and purposes. So, you know, it almost like an investment trust. So, you know, and it invests, as you can see, across a very wide range of different things. I think it's got pubs and all sorts, yeah.
Yeah,
Malden, where I used to live, where there's a lot of development going on. So yeah, it's a very strange investment company.
Yeah. So I'm not convinced. I like to know what they're doing, and I'm not sold on that. So I don't know what your thoughts, Fred.
I'd be interested to see the ownership of this. Let's have a look. Can I see the ownership of this? Yes, I can. The family owns about 60% of it.
Oh yeah, Fredo says it's basically
like a family office, isn't it? Really?
Yeah, yeah. Fredo says its target price is 29 pence per share. Why do you say that, Fredo? Why do you say that? Okay, someone's obviously predicting what I'm going to say here. But what's a good AI stock? Well, I tell you what. in fact, look at the front page here. We do cover. You and Jack Hall, we cover as well, which we're going to the results there. But is a good little story here on AI, intelligent. I own some of these, so I'm very biased. But I do like intelligent ultrasound. The GE, it's the biggest manufacturer of ultrasound equipment, uses now their AI in 3 of their sort of products. So I think it's very good. And they just started a new one, a live AI, which is very impressive. Sonos Live for obstetrics. So that's why I like them. And they are going to be profitable on current cash. The growth is very impressive. They're saying they're going to do around about 25 million forecast revenue for 2025. That's split in AI and their sort of classrooms and products. Now, if you look at where they've come from in AI, it's come from nothing. And if they didn't get the 12.5 million by 2025, that's massive growth. And like I said, profitable on current cash, so I do like them. But Freddie,
the exciting thing about, you know, again, it's just, it's it's a really interesting announcement, this intelligent ultrasound thing, but the main thing is that it really sort of cements that position they've got with GE Healthcare.
Yeah,
you know, that's really starting to deliver. That's a flagship partnership. They are huge. I mean, you know, more than half the world's ultrasound machines are GE Healthcare. So, you know.
Yeah, I can't see why GE wouldn't take them out if they're using their
own. They might do at one point, mightn't they?
And they haven't got their own AI as you know products as good as you know intelligent ultrasound. Why wouldn't they buy them? You know, but UJO. Let's look at the figures here. So Union Jack Oil, it plods along nicely. You know, it's generating cash. It's giving away cash in dividends and stuff. I'm not into oil and gas, pretty much. For me, I know a lot of people are, but. Anyway, I generated what? Profit for the year, $500,000 just for the half year, isn't it? Yeah, 6 months. So, and they got plenty of cash, by the way. I looked down at this, and cash of $6.2 million. Now, you know, when you realize they are literally, what, $6.2 million? What's the. So they need $21 million. They got almost $6.2 million in cash, and they're profitable. So nice little oil and gas company there.
Good field. Wessel, very, very productive. One of the UK's most productive onshore oil fields, if I understand that correctly. I mean, you know, like I said, oil and gas is always, the problem is, you know, even if you're producing at a lick, which Wessel is, Union Jack Oil has a big chunk of that, then, you know, you are beholden to the oil price.
Which
is why I tend not to favour oil and gas shares, amongst other reasons. But you know, this is, if you do like oil and gas, then you know you could do far worse than Union Jack Oil.
So, and then they do pay dividends, so they are sort of playing the
nice pipeline as well.
Yeah. Oof. What else? Premier African Minerals approval for the funding for Zulu projects. So for a long time, this has been traded and Zulu, and all of a sudden. It has a revitalized, you know, new sort of investors come in. So say, this is the big thing. But literally, if you go back at the chart, it's sort of has, it has some massive rallies and then it comes back down to earth. So there we are. It's most well read. People, traders tend to like that stock. But I don't know if they're ever going to get anything going. I have no idea if they will. Who knows?
Who knows?
I don't. The Bushveld as well. They've got an investment here. Bushveld, another sort of favourite. And this is in a massive downturn. This is another one that did hugely well. And so there's a lot of people following this. And you think they do obviously do vanadium batteries and manufacture that. But I mean, that downtrend has been huge here. From like this week, 47 pence down to 2.3 pence. Will it regain those previous highs? Who knows? That's probably why people are sort of always read this because they think, oh, it could go back up to that. I don't know if it will, but it has problems breaking this trend. It's like even today, you know, it's gone up and sold it down a bit. So even this news today is not, you know, changing that trend for a while. So, but I do like sort of vanadium space, you know, so in that area.
Yeah. You just wanted to see it really coming. I mean, it's not small, is it, old Bushveld? Top line. Well,
it was a lot bigger. No, I know. They got a bit of debt there. That's the trouble.
But it's I mean, the trouble is, it's not making any money. It's, you know, really strong top line, but not actually making any profit on it, which is problematic. But vanadium, you know, as you say, that is potentially a very important metal in the energy transition. So
yeah,
fortunes could turn.
Yeah, Amty's rallying after the fundraise. They need the edge. You know, they're almost in a fatal position when they need to raise money recently. They've raised a bit of money now, and they are rallying with that. I did say last week, I don't know if it's sustainable because they are burning a lot of cash, but who knows? It's rallying, so it's good for trade. Beacon Energy, right? This is odd because they're down like 26%. They do say there's positive results, but there's been some complications, I think, with, you know, water and whatever. I'm not very good at oil and gas, but... But they do seem, you know, very. It's basically that's it. It's been a challenging well from operation perspective, but they do say there's you know, good prospects there. So who knows? Yeah.
No one wants to see hole stability issues.
No,
absolutely not.
You're doing that. in fact, only the biggest loser above them is Sport Tech Health, which has decided they're going to delist. That's happening quite often, isn't it? And I think it's bad for shareholders, but it's not a bad thing. Because if you can make AIM a better quality sort of index, you know, then it won't hurt it. You know, it's not a bad thing, but it's down 34% today. What do you know about sport tech, John? Anything?
Not a lot. It's gambling tech, isn't it? No, not a lot, I'm afraid. I know it's been knocking around for years. You know, hasn't really been going forward as a business. Doesn't surprise me in the slightest to see them delisting. As you say, I think companies that are on the market that don't seem to be making, you know, progress, that don't need to use the market as a source of capital, or even as a sort of marketing tool. You know, a lot of them are just, you know, deciding that they can't justify the cost of being a listed company. So, yeah, no surprise, really.
Yeah. Matthew Roberts, like this, bit of controversy here. He says, nearly every person who comments here should probably not own stocks. He said, instead,
that's overly harsh.
Yeah, instead, a diversified ETF, armchair investors with 30, 50, or 100% of their stock. Foolish. Hard to earn money, easy to lose. There we are.
Do you know what? I do think. I mean, there is a sort of approach that's generally followed, you know, in terms of balancing risk and actually offering sort of some sort of more significant upside, and you know, having a core at the heart of your portfolio with something stable, which will sort of grow in line with the stock market over years, is very, very sensible.
Yeah.
But where's the fun in that? You
know, but also, I mean, people's people's positions are specific to their own, you know, like I said,
yeah.
And what who just said that there, Gregory, I think it was, you know, when you start off, you got a little bit of money, there's no point, you know, investing if you want to make money. There's no point investing in the big FTSE 100 companies where you're going to hope to get to, if you're lucky, 5-10%. You're not going to make, you know, a huge amount of money there. If you get, you know, if you get a couple hundred quid or a couple of grand and you want to double or treble it, you have to take bigger risks. And that's it. But you can get wiped out. But I mean,
That is akin to gambling, taking that approach. You know, and I think a lot of people...
Everything is gambling, John. Everything is gambling. It's all gambling.
No, it's not. It's balancing. It's risk-reward trade-offs.
You are staking money to make money. That's gambling.
But not with the risk of losing it all at the toss of a coin or the turn of a card or a horse falls at the first fence.
It's all about odds of a return, right? And you manipulate those odds by doing more research. Of course you can. Make sure your company's got cash, they've got all that. But I mean...
Very different to betting on the GGs.
It's all gambling. There's odds. It's all odds. You know, it's all about odds.
I mean, what I would say, you know, in opposition to what you say about, you know, if you've only got a couple of grand, take a punt. I actually think, you know, people need to get used to the idea of investing. So actually, you know, just putting a small amount aside, you know, every month into something that's safe and will grow and compound. It is actually a sensible place to start.
No, I believe I believe that. Yeah,
and then, you know, and learn. Yeah, you know, so sit and watch the market and read company accounts and understand how, you know, sort of numbers relate to other numbers and how industries work. Otherwise, it's just betting blind. So if, you know, build.
No, I agree with that. Go on.
I do think, and new investors should actually be just putting, you know, drip feeding into the market. But at the same time as learning it, till they're comfortable with, we're maybe able to take a slightly more risky bet, knowing what those risks entail.
Yeah, yeah. And I completely agree with that. I think, you know, from my perspective, I put 1% of my total portfolio value into that, you know, diversified sort of dividend paying fund. And I worked out within 100 sort of months, I'll pretty much be 100% invested in that, unless I make money off the other high-risk companies I own, and that'll be a feeder fund for that. So if that's how the portfolio increases, but if it all goes wrong, I've still got that fund that's paying me dividends.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I've got a backup there. But hopefully now my stock picking sort of ability isn't, you know, I've done it for long enough to understand that I'm not going to invest in companies that will go bust tomorrow. So I've done, okay, one or two of them may over the long term, but I'm diversified enough not to take a massive hit from that anyway. But hopefully I've done enough research to realize this company's got this amount of cash. If it's pre-revenue, it can last this long. You know, is it likely to raise more money? Or if it's profitable, it doesn't need cash, but, you know, where's the growth coming from? And why is it undervalued? And so those kind of things are important. But yeah.
But you're right. But you're saying you do that research and, you know, but, and you know how to do that research because you've been looking at this for years. So I think that's the skill that people have got to learn as they come into the market. You know, how do you spot a company that is, you know, potentially going to need to raise capital or actually deliver really, really nice growth? I mean, there's a question perhaps for the next show is, you know, how much research do people do into the companies that they invest in. You know, how much research should you do? You know, it's there is a sort of diminishing return idea that, you have to take account of. But anyway, no, core, I say core, nice having stable, drip feed into it, and satellites, you know, where you can generate some nice baggers. And that's fun.
Yeah. Well, Frida's saying, why wait years when we can make 100K in weeks? It's not that easy, though, is it? And, you know, Frida, I mean, you're what are you saying? You're saying it's an investment fund. I can't see what you said there. My target's 29 pence. He said, good market, a 4.5 million company is worth 15 million. Okay. But again, what are you... Are you basing that on the actual thing? I don't know.
I'll have another look at it. I do like investment companies, but as I say, this looks like a family office. I mean, the good thing about a family office, which is 60% owned by its, you know, by its sort of family, its family directors and shareholders, is that they're not going to make silly decisions and lose themselves all their money. They have skin in the game. You know, that is actually a positive there.
One of the most read actually today is. BSF Enterprise down 8.8%. I do like this area. A while back, I did invest in years ago, agronomics, because I quite like this area. I think we are moving towards, you know, it makes sense for the planet itself, you know, to not eat so much meat and try and do alternatives. And if you can come up with a meat, and I love meat, you know, and I did cut down meat massively. And I thought, if you can come up with, like, you know, lab-based meat, that you can make healthier than real meat. It isn't as capital intensive or as environmentally intensive. And of course, morally, you're not killing animals. It just makes sense. There are a lot of people in this space. BCF here come up with a strategy update, and they're saying, they're talking about doing lots of stuff. But I mean, it does seem, I listened to a report on these companies recently, and they say there's a lot of competition out there for lab-grown meat now. And I think you need deep pockets. But what's your thought? I do like this area. I think it'll get bigger and bigger. But it's just, I don't know where they are. It's a complex area. Where are BCF in regards to their competitors? Yeah. BSF, where are they in regards to their competitors? You know, are the competitors out there with bigger, deeper pockets? Because you do need them to even, to, you know, not really sort of get this going. But, you know, like I said, they're talking about a lot of action here. They're helping other companies get involved. And I don't know how much money they've got. That's the thing. But there we are.
What? Did they not? Have they not said? I haven't looked at their cash position. They're not long to market.
They raised some money a while back. But I just think there's, you know, let's have a look. Interim results here. Raised 2.9 million. So they've got a bit of cash there. Cash balance of 2.7 million. I wonder how much they're burning. But I do like this area. It's just, lost the period for half year. They're going to be, 660,000 pretty much. It's just, you know, it's quite capital intensive to not only get something going. Like we say, we'd new technology, and you may have breakthroughs, but to actually commercialize it, it's a long, expensive road, you know? And so that's my only thoughts, but I do like what they're doing, you know?
I can't, they haven't really got any numbers out there, so I can't see them anyway through your SharePad. I just want to say, you know, I don't feel they've said anything particularly new today that we hadn't heard before.
Yeah. They got an office in Hong Kong. They've done a pork fillet, which is apparently quite hard to do. And, of course, the Chinese love pork. They kill about 1 million pigs a day in China.
Yeah.
That's the reason to actually do lab-grown meat. It's like, the stats are phenomenal. It's millions of pigs killed every day. And they, well, truly. But anyway... it's a bit of resistance there. Like, it keeps hitting that. It broke up and come back down, and it's struggling to get above that sort of 14 pence level. But it seems like support is around about this level anyway, so it's not far off. But yeah, interesting company, but it's just the commercial prospects, I'm not sure where they are.
I need to see a bit more from this company before making a decision, whether I really like it or not. But because I just don't think they said a lot today that wasn't sort of out there.
Yeah. Matthew says, S&P 500 ETF since 2009 has made 500%. Sleep like a baby. Yeah, it's done very well. And that's why it's worth having exposure to those kind of companies. Even though sometimes, that's a good return, but even though sometimes the reward isn't as big, neither is the risk. You know, and like I said, when you look at companies sometimes and you say, oh, this company's going to do 600%, the chance of it doing that are quite slim. Whereas you're more likely to get 30% of a company and get 90% chance of it doing 30%, which is better than 1% chance of 600%, you know? So,
Well, I mean, I would say the S&P, you know, has been, who said that? Jim Slater, the elephants don't gallop. You know, Jim Slater, famous small cap investor. And you know, his thinking is much the same as yours. And he's a very successful investor. But, you know, elephants do gallop sometimes. And that's what's really driven, you know, the US market in the past decade and a bit. You know, companies like Apple and Alphabet, you know, they have grown extraordinarily. The returns on those companies have been absolutely huge. And they were already big companies to start with. Elephants do gallop. The question now is, you know, sort of going on a bit of a tangent, whether they continue to gallop at the rate they have before, you know, and whether the US market can continue, you know, its strong outperformance. I would say no, but I think maybe investors might need to have a think about, you know, what's happening in Asia. I think, you know, your next set of mega companies might come from a different part of the world.
By the way, Matthew has stirred up a bit of a controversy there. He said, Matthew, if you understand the risk reward and have real conviction, then it's what suits your needs. I was happy with going 100% because I had conviction and I adjust accordingly.
Okay. Yeah, that's fair enough. I would assume as well, if you are that, you know, you have that conviction, you are able, you know, you are comfortable going in, you know, all in, that also, you know, that it's money that you can afford to lose.
Exactly. When you're 100% in there, you've got to be right. You've got one chance there.
Got to be right.
So, you know, why not say, let's have two plays or three plays, at least if one bombs, at least I've got, you know. So that's what I'm saying. Quickly, before we finish, let's quick some headlines here worth looking at, I think. And scroll down here, get the sort of top business stories. I'll put these up there if any catch your fancy. This is a slowing. They're saying now that they're paring back their interest rate hikes because survey of businesses, further indication the Bank of England could limit future interest rate rises. And they say labour market data is released tomorrow. It's likely to be slowing with unemployment rising for the third consecutive month, which is what the Bank of England want to see, of course. BMW is good news, investing in mini factories. This is in Cowley. Expect to say 600 million in updating the Cowley plant. Waitrose and Aldi cut more prices. This is good news. So they're cutting, what is it? Waitrose, 250 products by an average of 10%. While Aldi said, you know, 55 fruit and vegetable products by an average of 11%, which is very good, isn't it? Because it's food coming down, you know, you've got jobs coming down. We talked about Vistry. They're doing sort of affordable housing.
Yeah,
and Heathrow, you flagged this up to me, John. Why are you flagging Heathrow? It's on amounts.
Always keep an eye on the travel numbers. Always keep an eye on the travel figures. You know, been really, really very, very strong.
Do you know what I saw here? Passengers, so they had literally, you know, more bags than ever were checked in. They've recruited 25,000 new colleagues in the last 2 years. Passenger numbers, extra time to check in. Security wait now is average 1.5 minutes. Really? It's more than that to take your belt off and all that stuff and go through the thing, put your shoes up there, take your trousers off, maybe need to take off. But anyway, they say Pret a Manger sold a million sandwiches this summer, plus others indulge in retail therapy to get beach ready, with a pair of sunglasses sold every 2 minutes. That's someone with a very, very bad memory. Where's my glasses? I go back and buy another pair.
I lose a pair of sunglasses every 2 minutes, so that probably explains that. why that might be the case. But yeah, I know, I'm always interested in the travel figures because you've got quite a lot of numbers, companies that are exposed to that. We've talked about, you know, the likes of On the Beach before, Jet2. You know, you've always got your airlines, EasyJet, Ryanair. You know, it's been a difficult sector. So signs of recovery are good. You know, the thing to wonder is whether, you know, everyone is spending their money getting away and not on the high street.
Yeah,
does appear to be the case.
Thank you, everyone, for the comments. And Frida, I want you, if you're convinced about this, I want you to post your returns of the last 10 years, okay? Let me know. And let me know how good you are, because, of course, you know, it's always, you say, it's a winner or loser there. But long-term returns, what are yours? Let me know. Are you a genius? Frida 300? I like that. But let us know. And subscribe, please. Hit that subscribe button. And we'll catch up tomorrow. And of course, employment figures out tomorrow, so that should be interesting. And it will see the rate at which the Bank of England, you know, stop or start hiking it more. But there we are. Cheers, John. Speak tomorrow.
Speak tomorrow.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.